welcome to Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Christine.
And today we're going to be discussing the streamers. So our Apple Yes! TV, our Amazon, our Netflix, all the pros and cons, which ones you might cut from a roster in the new year. We have been wanting to talk about this for a very long time. We have been heated about our discussion.
We have so many opinions on the streamers because we both have all of them. Because it's kind of part of our job to stay on top of discussing all of these things and knowing what's in the pop culture zeitgeist. And so we have spent a lot of time on all of them. We're going to evaluate them all for y'all today, air all our grievances and all our highlights. I am so excited because the strike is over.
Yay!
Yes! We can talk about all of the fucking streamers, all the shows, all the movies. I'm just like, it feels so free, Natasha. I'm so excited.
I know. It feels like I have been catching myself saying things. And I'm like, oh, can't say that. Like, can't share that online. Like, I feel like I can't even share my TV, like take a picture of it. And like all of a sudden I can now. And it's so freeing.
Yeah. It felt like kind of like a gag order on all the things we usually like to talk about.
So. Yes. Now that we are like content creators, but SAG did ask us to not share Struck Media. So that's why we didn't share it for so long. And we did not want to cross that picket line. But now that, you know, the actors did the hard work, they were at the picket lines, they got what they wanted. Like, was so happy for them. We're happy to be back at work and be talking about all the movies and TV shows that we love.
We are so thrilled that the WGA and SAG have now come to agreements with the AMPTP. So, we can talk about things. It's up and running again. I'm just thrilled. And before we go into our main discussion, as always, we've got Snap Crackle Pop Culture News. And the first item on that list was, of course, the SAG strike is over. Rejoice and be merry.
That's going to be like you know, like on Thanksgiving where you go around the table and say you're thankful for one thing. I'm going to say I'm thankful for the strike to be over.
I am thankful for WGA and SAG strike to be over as well. Mm-hmm. Ooh, it was a long road there.
I think the longest strike that the actors have ever.
Yep. It was 100 days in 2007. And that felt long as fuck. Well, we felt it for a long time afterward because of the writers obviously didn't have anything written for the second season of all the shows. And it was very different in 2007 because we were all on the regular TV schedule for the most part. Now we have got TV dropping at all different times of year, but then it was either like the fall season or the spring season or the summer season. And the summer was all like the kind of like fun TV that was like more reality based. And our shows just didn't come back in the fall. And if they did, they were kind of shitty. It was sad. There have been so many trailers since obviously the strike. We're not going to talk about them all, but I did want to highlight the Mean Girls trailer. Did you watch it? Because I was both tickled and irritated because I felt like they were spoiling a lot of the new lines that they tweaked, that there were plays on the old lines in the original Mean Girls.
I didn't watch it when it officially dropped. I watched a screen recording from a movie theater.
I'm not even talking about that one. A new one dropped. And it's much more detailed. Yes.
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't watch it.
And Tina Fey is in it playing her role, which I am thrilled to see. I love to see it. If you don't know, Tina Fey wrote the original Mean Girls screenplay. So she has been involved with all of the Mean Girls adaptations since. And there are just so many people that I recognize in this movie. So many actors that, you know, we've been seeing all over the place for a long time. Regina George is being played by Renee Rapp. And we've got the girl from Spider-Man, the blonde girl, playing Caddy, who is actually Katie, but I'm going to call you Caddy. I am so excited for it because of what I saw from the trailer, but I'm just annoyed because I would have been tickled to not know that they were playing like a twist on all those lines, and they would have been so funny if I just saw them for the first time in the theater.
Well, that's why I avoided it. Ali'i Carvalho is playing
Janice.
Oh my god. And then what's his face from Summer I Turned
Conrad.
Pretty? Yeah, mm-hmm. Conrad is
playing Aaron. They really said Gen Z icons for the cast, Katie says. They really did. Mm-hmm. And they're like, this is not your mother's Mean Girls. And I was like, eye roll. Come on.
I'm very excited for the musical. Christine and I both saw it when I think it was in its first run on Broadway. And the songs are amazing. I think this is one of the first like movies turned Broadway musical turned back to movie musical that has happened.
I was nervous about this, but I like how it's a combination because I didn't love the musical because it didn't have like those iconic moments that, I mean, at least they didn't hit for me like the movie hit. It wasn't like as funny, and the trailer really felt like it was like, no, this is like the movie, but it's also a musical.
Okay.
So I'm excited. My mother's Mean Girls was Grease, Katie said. Yeah, exactly. I was like, what are you talking about? I am merely 33. I do not have high school age children, and none of my friends have high school age children. I mean, some people maybe do, but you figure that you'd have to be Lorelai Gilmore. Like, yeah. You'd have a... So now, what else has happened? The Last Airbender first Netflix trailer dropped. Did you watch that?
No.
Yeah, all right.
I'm not a big Last Airbender fan.
I know a lot of Avatar The Last Airbender fans were very excited about it because it looks beautiful. Like, it looks like a faithful adaptation. And Appa looks so cuddly. I want an Appa. Whenever I watch Avatar The Last Airbender and I see Appa, like, I just think of Chandler, my dog. I'm like, he acts just like Chandler, just like every animal. Like the dragon in How to Train Your Dragon. And I was also tickled by how fluffy he looks in the trailer. So, yeah. Katie says I'm optimistic. I am optimistic as well. I know a lot of people were like, well, the original creators left the project. And, yeah, I don't know what that was about, but I'm hoping that it's still good.
So. Yes.
All right. Do you want to take us into the Taylor Travis Argentina news, Natasha, since you didn't write anything down on here?
So Taylor and Travis were in Argentina. Taylor performed in Argentina, and it was very exciting.
Well, Travis flew to watch her performance many hours in a plane.
Yes. 12 hours in the plane. I didn't know he was there until I saw the video of, obviously everyone saw it from many different angles, of Taylor running to Travis and kissing him in front of everyone. And I screamed.
There were so many like little random ass videos where everyone was freaking out because Taylor looked at him during Lover and then pointed to him during Blank Space and was like, I love the players. And you love the game. And he like threw his hands up. There was just like so many things. And then before that, then during Karma, the line change. The most, like, this was like the craziest thing that's ever happened. I feel like she changed the line of the end of Karma to say Karma is the guy from the Chiefs coming straight home to me, instead of Karma is the guy on the screen who was Joe coming straight home to me, and we all died.
I first saw the video of her like running to kiss him, and like the description was Karma's the guy on the Chiefs running straight home to me, and I thought it was just like a cheeky little description. I didn't actually realize she changed the lyrics. And then as I was like going through Twitter and TikTok, I was just seeing all these little things that were happening in the show, and like, yeah, the secret song mashup, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this was the best show ever, and all these videos of Travis and her dad.
Yeah. During the acoustic set, she did Is It Over Now, but she did the version where in the bridge she sings, "Remember when it hit the brakes too soon?" She's like the Out of the Woods that was going viral, that mashup on TikTok. She did that as the surprise song. And she also did Endgame with Travis in the audience. It was just so many gems that I think we were all dying the rest of the night. Like, there's a video. Did you see like the latest video of Travis reacting to the Chiefs thing? Like, Scott Swift, her dad, who is standing right next to him, like throws his hands up and pushes
him. Are you recording him as well?
At a different point, he was recording him doing like the ole, 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 Taylor, ole. Like, it was really cute. But yeah, and then Travis like puts his hands on his forehead and is like, oh my God. He's like shaking his head. It was so cute. Did you watch The Kiss 1,000 times?
Yes, from several different angles. I had people in my DMs being like, I'm not even a big Swiftie, but this is so magical and amazing. And I love to see this. And I'm like, yeah, because it's a literal romance happening before our eyes. I saw a lot of people talk about how, like, I mean, she went through this huge breakup after 6 years. And it was just, you know, so many people can relate to that after like losing someone that you thought was going to be the one. And then she goes on this huge tour and we see her crying and being emotional during songs. And then out of the fucking blue, Travis comes and Taylor is just going for it. Like, she's jumping, she's happy. And it is so magical and also inspiring to watch it happen too, because it's like, even though if you've been hurt, and I know this is like real people's lives, but even though if you've been hurt and you've gone through like a huge heartbreak, you can still find love again. Like when she's saying Labyrinth and she's like, uh-oh, I'm falling in love.
All yeah, right, yeah.
And it's happening again, and it's so exciting.
The night before, that was her surprise song, and it is the most beautiful acoustic performance, I think, of all the ones I've watched. Like, the wind is perfectly blowing in her hair, and the song just hits so much harder live than it does on the album. Do you agree? Like, it, I could feel it in my bones as she was singing it live. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you saw the plane wide shot, but the plane lands. Yeah. Like,
what the fuck?
And in the song, you know, she's talking about the plane coming right back around. I thought the plane was going down. It's just wild, man. The universe is wild. But it's been such an adorable stretch in Argentina. All the surprise songs have been really great. And she was nominated just this week for 6 Grammys. I saw a tweet yesterday that I just started cackling. I sent it to Natasha last night, but it was like, being a Swiftie is so funny because she was nominated for 6 Grammys today, and that is the least important news of the day. That was the day of the Travis Argentina show.
Like,
it's wild. And it's so true. It's so true. Like, we're not even talking about it. But Taylor Swift is currently tied with Frank Sinatra, Stevie Wonder, and Paul Simon for most album of the year wins in Grammy's history, with 3, because she's won 3 times. And she could earn a 4th with Midnights if she were to win again. She's also got the most Song of the Year nominations in history, with 7, like, flat out, she's got the most Song of the Year noms. And she was nominated for Album of the Year, Midnights, Song of the Year, Antihero, Record of the Year, Antihero, Pop Solo Performance, Antihero, Pop Duo Group Performance with Karma, Feat Ice Spice, and Pop Vocal Album with Midnights. So many. I don't know if she'll win Album of the Year, but she sure has been like Taylor Swift's year.
It feels like she's very much on top, and I'm very happy for her.
I was just crying watching, like, not like sad tears, but like happy tears, like watching all these videos and stuff and seeing everyone be like universally excited, because it's wild how many people are like so excited and brought together by like Taylor's romantic life right now, you know? Katie says, I say, that's my baby and I'm proud. Yes. All right. Last on the dock today, I wanted to mention the other day, I'm done going to Goodreads, but the other day, the first review from someone who read my book that's coming out attached at the hip dropped, and they said, I absolutely love this book. It kept your attention, and I love seeing how Ori developed as a character and the relationship she'd made along the way. A great rom-com that I didn't know I needed. And F spiders, lol, which is irrelevant to the book. But my novel, Attached at the Hip, comes out May 21st, 2024, and it is a Survivor-esque rom-com where our lead ends up on a reality TV show that's very Survivor-like, but it has a romantic slant, and she is attached by 8 feet of rope to her high school crush, who she hasn't seen in 4 years. And it's a time, and it's available for pre-order, and the link is in the show notes. And if you want to support my author career, I greatly appreciate you pre-ordering my new book. I'm so excited about it. And the fact that people are getting giveaway arcs in the mail and I haven't gotten my arcs is bad.
What? People are getting arcs right now?
Someone, the people who won the giveaway, because this person got it in a giveaway on Goodreads, are getting printed arcs. And I got tagged in a picture on someone's story that they won a giveaway arc. And I was like, where are my arcs?
I want mine too.
I have to email my publisher and just be like, are my arcs coming soon? Because like, I'd love to do some socials with arcs.
Yeah, with a real book.
With a book in my hand, yeah. So, we'll see. Hopefully that's on the horizon soon. All right, we're going to move into What Right Now, where we've reestablished the movie and TV categories. But first, books. Natasha, what are you reading?
I started Fourth Wing. Yay!
Wow!
I think I left off on like chapter 9 this morning.
Nice.
Yeah, I started it, I think, mid last week, and I haven't had a lot of time to read it, but I've gotten pretty far into it, considering how much little time I've had this week. And I'm enjoying it. And I woke up this morning, I'm like, all you have to do is finish decorating the house and you can listen and read to Fourth Wing while doing it. And I had to fold all my laundry too. So
I am very excited that you're finally reading Fourth Wing and we can chat about all the things. Natasha was like casting all of the characters with real actors, which is something I never do. And I'm just like, whoa, okay. All right. I can see it.
Wait, also,
you tell us?
You yeah. said that Dane had tan skin and blonde hair, but then I just read a part where he has light brown hair.
All right, I'm picturing him with blonde hair, but he's not, like, I know Ryerson is the one who has darker skin.
He's got darker skin. I feel like,
yeah.
Didn't they say he had, like,
I pictured Dane
hair?
Like that annoying, like, football guy. In high school, like the classic, like blonde, annoying.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
That's how I have him in my head.
At first, I was like, oh, yeah, Dane loved this, super sweet. And I'm like, oh my God, stop. Okay, so my initial casting, which is, it's been flickering as I read it.
Flickering?
flicker between a few different actors. Is Sabrina Carpenter came to mind first for Violet because she's petite, but I like Christina and I were talking about, like, Violet doesn't seem like she's short. She just seems like she's, you know, average height,
like,
but more
frail.
Lanky
yeah.
and frail because of her disability. Mm-hmm. So then I was kind of putting her with Barbara, the model.
Katie says, who's Henry Plank? Does Henry have a role yet?
Henry does not have a role. Yeah, no, he's a little...
Maybe he could play one of the old people.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't know who yet. Usually Henry, I cast Henry in like an adult romance. Not, I mean, this is an adult romance, but they're like, you know,
young. Can voice the dragon, Katie says. Yes, he can voice the dragon.
Natasha isn't at the dragon parts yet, but he could voice one of the dragons.
That would be amazing.
Oh, Abby's saying Joey King as Violet. Yeah, I could see that too. All these like
no
young, but Joey King is like, why not? All these young women in the Gen Z zeitgeist, I feel like, could do it, but she is very, I do picture her much gangly than those women who are very strong looking.
Zayden right now, I thought he had long hair apparently, but there's a lot of fan art with him.
I picture longer hair too.
Yeah.
Maybe he cuts his hair at one point, but like I picture like not really long, but like longer.
I don't really have a fan cast for him. I initially, he's just like a, he's like the Duke of Sandringham, not Sandringham, the Duke of.
The Duke from Bridgerton.
From Bridgerton. Simon. He's Simon-esque.
That guy feels so like sophisticated looking, and like Ryerson has such like a wild, untamed, like handsomeness that I can't put those two together because I've only seen him as the Duke.
Yeah, because he's definitely a made up person in my head, but I don't really know, but that's my casting so far.
Well, I have been reading Iron Flame. I'm only about like 15% of the way in because I only have been reading it during my shower time, so it's always like a quick couple pages, but I'm enjoying the crap out of it, and it's just kind of revving up. And I just finished Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabriel Zevin. The book was so beautifully written, and it was such an accurate portrayal of the creative process and the paranoia that comes along with it, alongside of the euphoria and the highs and lows and what it can do. It's about a friendship, but how working together, you know, affects their friendship in these negative ways sometimes. But it's really well done. And I had so many feelings, and I had to take down some notes because there's just some lines that really just cut right into me. And I was like, this is so real. There's this one that made me feel really warm and fuzzy. That was one of the characters was in like was depressed and going through like a depressive episode. And their friend was like, I don't know what to do. And this other friend that he was asking advice from said this thing that like friendship. So it takes place in like the 90s, a lot of it, like 96, 97. And he was like, friendship's like a Tamagotchi. And I was just like you have to show up kind of, you know, with like a Tamagotchi, you have to like nurture it, and you have to do it even if like you're not getting anything back. You just have to keep trying and be there and like bring them things and just try to get through to them. And I don't know, it really just, I just teared up. I was like, wow, that's beautiful in such a random way. But there was more to it, but like that was the line that really triggered it, like friendship's like a Tamagotchi. Yeah, it's giving Nesta, Abby says. It didn't have like the ending that I would want from like a romance where everything is like nice and tied up. I had one of those endings where it's like, huh, wow, all right, I'm gonna sit on that and I'll see how I feel next week. But I'm really glad I read it because people have been talking about it for a while now, and I really wanted to be in on the conversation, and now I can be. But I didn't say what it was about at all, really.
That's enough to get us to read it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's about these two game designers in the 90s, and they're in college, and they're friends, and they start making a game together, like a computer game. Mm-hmm. And they are both like super passionate about it, and together they make amazing work, more like better than they are making the work by themselves, you know, and they really inspire each other. And but we start with just like their friendship, and I don't want to say anything else. That's what it's about. Anyway, I'm glad I read it, but it's not like a, it doesn't end on this like feel good, happy note. It's one of those like that makes you think and feel and all that.
Yeah, you related it back to La La Land last night.
Yes. Well, because I was like, the end of La La Land made me feel a similar way. I was like, huh, I wanted them to get together. But then I loved what La La Land did because I kept thinking about that for ages. Like, I couldn't stop thinking about it because I related to so many different aspects of it in so many different ways. And I thought it was really beautiful in the end how they did it. How they portrayed it on screen. And it was so Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow had an ending that was like, huh, the same way. All right. So what did you watch movie-wise this week? My gosh.
We have a lot. We have a long list of things that we've been watching, obviously, since the strike. But what came to mind this week the first that I watched.
Most recent.
Was No Hard Feelings. It was really fun. I didn't know where it was going, and some of like the jokes were funny. It was just really good to see Jennifer Lawrence like playing a really fun role again.
Silly. Yeah.
And I think the guy also was so hilarious. Just all the things she was trying to do to like get him to like sleep with her was just like cringeworthy. And I related to him it was so hard.
Oh, there's this iconic scene where she's like beating people up naked.
Yes, I did not expect that. She's literally
so hard,
like full frontal, like titties like flailing in the air. I was like, whoa.
Like, this is a movie where I feel like a lot of the comedy comes from shock value, so I don't know if it would be funny the second time around, but like there's a lot of like hijinksy shock stuff that would just like threw me on my ass metaphorically as I was watching. But it was really fun. What about TV? What have you been watching this week?
I started Loki this week. Alex and I wanted to wait until most of all the episodes were out. And it is so good. Gosh, it is such a juxtaposition to the Secret Invasion show, which I had such high hopes for. But that show was so lackluster, even though they had a full star-studded cast. It just was lacking, like, it was confusing. It was, there was too many big players in it. It just wasn't great. But Loki has a same star-studded cast, but it is so good, and they have a clear vision, and like Owen and Tom working together is my favorite thing ever. It's just so great, and I love it.
I have to watch it. Everyone's telling me it's amazing.
It is.
And I'm behind. I started The Buccaneers, which is a new series on Apple Plus that I guess was based on a novel, but also was based on, Natasha said there was already a TV series in the 90s called The Buccaneers that she watched. Yeah.
Based on a Henry James novel. Oh God, I think that's correct. And then there was an adaptation in the 90s. And the actress, what's her name? Giuliana, something like that. Carla Giuliano or something like that, from the Spy Kids mom, she plays Nan, and it's so good.
All right. Well, okay. So I've now watched 3 episodes of The Buccaneers, and I like it, but I don't love it. It's missing something with the pacing, kind of feels off. A lot of the drama doesn't feel earned to me yet. So I'm not like invested so much in any one character because we're not taking the time to get to know them enough to feel invested. There's like 6 women that feel like they're at the forefront, with Nan being the lead character. She's played by Christine Forsenth, who plays Alaska in the Looking for Alaska adaptation that came out on Hulu a few years back. And she's great. And I really like a lot of the actors thus far, but the dialogue is kind of lacking the spark for me that makes everything feel exciting. And while I'm having fun with it, and I'm going to keep watching right now, I'm not to the point where I'm like, I don't want to watch this. I don't feel invested enough in anything yet. I want to feel more for the characters and I want to know them a little bit better. It's not like Bridgerton where like immediately I was like, oh, in season two, like you're so on board by like just the first scene with the new lead. I forget her name in Bridgerton and her name, the actress, but the lead of season two, what is her name? Katie?
Oh,
yeah. She doesn't want to get married. You know, she's Kate. A little older. She's gonna
Kate
be,
Sharma.
Kate Sharma. Okay. Yeah. Just from that first interaction with the love interest guy. Oh my God. I can't remember anyone's name. It's been too long, even though I just rewatched, I feel like at the beginning of the year. But anyway, you're completely in love with their love that doesn't exist immediately. Like you're shipping them so hard that you are so invested just by their first interaction. And it's not the same way. They want it to be so bad with Buccaneers, I feel like. And I feel like there is chemistry, but you don't feel it like you feel it when you're watching Bridgerton.
I need to correct myself. It is a book by Edith Wharton, not Henry James.
Okay. I'm glad you looked it up.
And it's, I truly feel like they tried to take this modern approach so far. I've only watched most of the first episode. They tried to take a modern approach. And so what happens when like historical period dramas do this is that it's so weird to have like that modern speech juxtaposed to even other characters who are speaking in that same like English manner, and it's just like, whoa, it's because if everything feels flighty so far to me.
It makes it feel weird when they do say something in Old English too, like one of the characters says the word I shan't be able, and it does sound so out of place because you weren't talking like that the whole time.
Yeah, but Dickinson, I mean, does do it well.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think Dickinson really mastered it. It was perfection in Dickinson, and I think they're trying to go for that same vibe because Dickinson is also an Apple TV Plus original, and it's just not hitting the same way because it's not as consistent, and it feels way more grandiose because Dickinson was kind of contained on this rural property. Mm-hmm. And here we're going all over the place. We're in England and they're all about the society life over there. And it just doesn't feel as natural to go in and out of this modern vernacular.
Yeah. It's giving vibes of Persuasion. If you watched that last year with, what's her face? Dakota Johnson. But that was irritating because the source material is so beloved. I don't know the Buccaneers, but I do know that 90s show, and that 90s show was fucking amazing. So if you don't like the Apple TV version, just go watch the 90s version because it's good.
I do think that there still has potential. Like, I'm going to keep watching. And I also really love the idea behind it. Like, it's about these American women going into England where women are so stifled and the Americans are so more progressive in their views of womanhood. And it's such a strong friendship between these women. And they want to support each other being themselves and being loud and boisterous and like happy outwardly feeling their emotions. And I love all that. Mm-hmm. It's not hitting as like you want it to hit so far.
Yeah. And I will say not everyone has a happy ending, so it's not going to be like super happy, but it will be happy in other places.
All right, spoilers. All right, we're going to move into our main discussion after 50 minutes of talking about TV and movies and Taylor Swift. Oops. Before we do, I'm going to take a quick second to thank the listeners out there. We love you all. We're so thankful for your listenership. And if you aren't already, we'd love it if you followed the show for free in your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. And if you like the visual show, we have a visual show on YouTube, youtube.com/@thoseporkingfangirls, where you can watch any episode. If you like that, we'd love it if you subscribed for free to our YouTube channel so you don't miss an episode there. And if you want to support the show in a bigger way, we have a Patreon, and we are a Patreon supported show. We couldn't do this without our Patreon community. We're so thankful for y'all. We have a lot of fun perks over there. We do an extra 30-minute show every week called Fangirl Tea Time, where we tell stories from our personal life. We dig into some topics that are a little more intense that maybe we don't feel comfortable with on the main show. And it's just a really great time. There's a really great community over there. We love it. And we have two other tiers. The Team Jacob tier is the one that I just mentioned. And then there's Team Edward, where there's a bonus episode every month. And then Team Polis Bananas, where you get the opportunity to be on the show. We have a listener on every single month, a patron, where we talk about fandom and all the things we love to talk about on the show. It's so fun. And we do fangirl bonding sessions every single month at the end of the month and hang out with our patrons. And it is a grand old time. We love it.
We absolutely adore it.
So yes, the link is in the description if you're interested in checking out our Patreon. All right. The streamers! Ooh, Natasha.
Yes.
I want to open up with this question so we can establish like the foundation of this conversation. What streamers do you have, and are you sharing with anyone?
Yes. You know, when we first talked about this, we didn't actually talk about how many people do mooch off of us. And I want to say this in the nicest and kindest of way. I pay for every single one of these, you guys. And I do, because I do write them off. We're going to talk about in this episode, if we talk about it in our business, they get written off. Okay. So that's why I do pay for all of these. I'm getting a little annoyed though. Okay. So first of all, we have Netflix. So every single streamer is obviously shared between me and my twin brother, because we live in the same apartment. Mm-hmm. Netflix is only Alex and I. Then we've got HBO Max, which is the most shared of them all. This one is shared between two of our closest friends and their couples. So it's shared between three households. And then all of a sudden, I get this call from my cousins. I didn't think about it. And they're like, hey, what's your HBO Max log? What's your Max login? Like, we really want to watch this movie and put it on for Bodhi. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. So I gave them my HBO Max login. By the way, the two couples do pay their way. And so I gave it to them thinking that they were going to just watch one movie. No, I get another call next week and they're like, oh my gosh, by the way, thank you so much for the Max login. We've been watching all of these. I'm like, what? No, bitch, you gotta pay. Okay, so okay.
Well, at least they're putting in some money. They're not just taking it for free.
Yes, that's the only one. Okay, but then we have Hulu, which is the most expensive of them all, because I pay for no ads. I used to pay for a live, and that was like almost $60 a month.
That's 50.
Yeah. That's shared between the couples as well, but they don't pay their way for that one, because that's how I log into to Max. We have Disney Plus, which
no one chips in for the Hulu one, the most expensive one.
No.
All right. Hulu doesn't even let you share with people who are outside your like zip. It constantly asks questions.
That exactly. We only have them in three different households. So that's it. Yes. Which is why I think I pay for more, because I have to have more sign-ins. Okay. We have Disney Plus, which is shared between Alex and my aunt's family. I pay for that one. We have Paramount Plus, which is just Alex and I. We've got Peacock, which Heather has an account on. Amazon Prime, which Heather also has an account on, but that's actually my fault because I signed into my Amazon on her TV so I could watch all my movies. And then she never signed out because I have an amazing list of movies that I've purchased.
That's not your fault.
No, it's not. But she made an account.
What are you talking about?
We've got Crunchyroll, which is Alex's thing. So I even pay for that one. And we've got Apple TV. And occasionally I will subscribe to Stars and Showtime.
Well, Stars and Showtime are bundled through like Amazon and through Paramount Plus, which is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have most of these as well. I have Netflix, Paramount Plus, Max, Hulu, Disney Plus, Peacock, and Amazon Prime. And I shared most of them with Paul because when I started getting them, he was a youth, you know, and we were friends. And I was on top of streamers like when they start the second there the was a second. Streamer, I was like, oh, Netflix, oh, Hulu. And before that, I was watching everything live. Originally, so before the streamers came around, all of the networks were starting to have their own streamings on their websites for free. So ABC.com had a streamer where I watched all of Lost. Mm-hmm. And CBS, up until like 2 years ago, let me watch Survivor on the website, which was amazing, and The Amazing Race. And all, like NBC had one where I watched Heroes. Every single site had their own streamers, and it was free. And there would be like one commercial that was 30 seconds long that I'd have to watch every commercial break, which was so doable. I don't give a shit about one 30 second commercial. Sometimes they were 15 seconds. Like, it was amazing. In the days before like TV had switched over to the internet, because we could get away with almost no ads at all and free. Everything was free. But yeah, so for the longest time, I've been just the only person who paid for all the stuff. And then Paul finally said, like, I'm going to get Peacock. So you're on my Peacock. Don't worry about Peacock. I got this. I was like, great, amazing. I'm so happy to have one that's not being paid for by me. But when I was dating my ex-boyfriend, like, he was just on all of mine. And even when I got Disney Plus, he was like, oh, we'll split it. And it was just me. He never paid me for Disney Plus. And I feel like my ex-boyfriend before that was on my Amazon account even after we broke up for like a year. I would see something and I'd be like, oh, I did not watch that. Are you kidding? with John, I don't care as much, and I'll let him use something to like catch up with Survivor. But he's gotten off my other ones. But yeah. It's nothing turns me off now more than like being on a first date with someone and them talking about like how they're like on all of their friends' streamers and they don't have any of their own. It just pisses me off. I'm like, you are a 30 something year old man. Get one of your own fucking streamers.
It's just, there's too, like, I literally just listed off 10. Like, there's too many to be like, oh, yeah, I use this one. I use this person's. I mean, I know a lot of friends, too, like their parents will have one. And then there's, like, the entire family is on, like, Netflix or something, which I find very funny. I just, like, I don't know that life. Like, the only life I know is that I pay for every single fucking one of these.
Yeah, same. And I see with my family, they were way slow on the uptake for any of the streamers. Like, I was in college and I was like, I need Netflix, so I'm getting it. Yeah. And I've had it. And Hulu, like, immediately, I was like, Hulu used to be free as fuck. Yeah. It was amazing. Like, I was like, how does Hulu work? I could just watch all this stuff for free. And then we finally got, like, commercialless Hulu. I think that's the one I pay for. But Hulu's bundled with Max right now. And so I think I pay like $30 a month for Hulu. So that's my most expensive too.
Yeah. Okay. Wait. Yeah. That's why it's so expensive, because I have the Hulu and Max. Okay.
Yeah. Same. Same. And I'm like, okay, we'll get to it now. Okay. Let's really briefly touch on, like, what do you think is equal when it comes to sharing streamers? Because, like, I'm not against sharing streamers. I just don't want it to be like, you're all just taking mine and I'm paying for all of them. And so feel like it's hard to kind of police, like, I'm going to pay for all of them and you're going to pay me, because I don't want to be like, hey, you owe me for the month. And people just forget. So it seems like the fairest way is to do like, I'll do this streamer, you cover this streamer, and we'll share passwords, right? Mm-hmm. Streamer for streamer.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah. I only have one friend who is good, though, Kirsten, who is good about paying me every single month for her. Well, I guess she does pay for the Hulu Max bundle. She pays me every single month for that. And it's fun because we have a little game where Dakota and Alex, so Dakota is Alex's childhood best friend, where he and Alex switch each other's profile pictures to something very funny. And it's very fun to log on to Max and see which characters they've decided.
Oh my God. I have the same thing with Paul. He is Jabba the Hutt and his name is Lard Man.
It's so good. Anyways, I do agree. A streamer for a streamer is the best way to go. But like, literally, I pay, like, I think I tried to tally it off. I probably pay between like $100 to like $140 per month just on fucking streamers.
Yeah, I don't even want to look at it. I can't.
Christine, you and I need to start switching them.
Need to do streamer for streamer.
Yes. The only thing is like, I'm very afraid to let go of Netflix because it's my algorithm.
I'm not letting go of Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm never letting go of Netflix. I'll never let go of Jack. Okay, let's start going through the streamers here, because I love a lot of them. You know, they've been with me for so long. And we're going to start with Amazon, alphabetical order here. Amazon is so great because it just comes with your Amazon Prime bundle. I think this is like the smartest thing they've ever done. because so many people got on board with their subscription service because it comes with everything. And then you end up, even if they don't have what you want to watch, you will buy it from Amazon, like rent it or purchase it so that you have it forever in your Amazon library. Like, it's not the same as any of these other streamers because you're never buying anything and owning it forever. You will watch it and it might leave the website and you can't watch it anymore, and you're still paying every month. Which I love. I don't see myself ever dropping Amazon, because also you can bundle, like you were saying. Like, I have Stars on Amazon for like an extra like $10 a month for sometimes, and then I'll drop it when I don't need Stars anymore. And it's just so convenient. How do you feel about Amazon?
Well, Amazon is our mothership. So we have Amazon. We have Amazon Fire TV. So we also need to preference that Christine watches all of these on her computer. I watch all of these on my TV.
Yes.
So our experiences might be a little different. So Amazon Fire TV is amazing. We have a Roku TV. Fucking hate Roku. We ended up just buying a Fire TV so we can use that. The Fire TV interface is very customizable. We can pick which apps we want up there, so we can easily switch through which ones we want to watch. They have our library right there. So like all of it, it replaced our DVD collection. We used to have like thousands of DVDs, and now they're just all on the TV, which is great. I think you get the most bang for your buck too with the Prime, and it just makes the most sense. If you're an Amazon household, which we are, because we've got Alexa, it makes the most sense for us.
Yeah, I mean, there are some cons to Amazon Video, like Prime Video. And I think the interface is just not like the ideal thing to pop into when you're looking for something to watch. It's more of for me, I like it better as like a collection of shit that I've gathered, yes, not a place to be like, oh, this is what you're going to watch tonight. And it's just overload because they do have like a stars section and a freebie section and a this section and a this section. And you're just like, ah, there's a countdown now. There's like a top 10, which makes it a little bit more helpful. Mm-hmm. But it's not like the Netflix top 10 where they're divided between TV and movies so you can see more clearly. It's kind of all bumbled together on Amazon. And they do have some great originals like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, but there's not as many standouts on their originals for me, yeah, at least. I know I watched High Castle. Is that what it's called? The one where there's like this alternate, The Man in the High Castle. And that one was really good, but it started to get really depressing. So I had to stop watching it. So is there any originals that
The Summer that you really loved
on Amazon?
The
Summer Turned Pretty. Da-da.
And The Boys.
And The Boys is fucking great.
Gen V. Oh my gosh. That was another show I just watched this week. That show is amazing. If you love The Boys, you have to watch Gen V. So good. Yeah. I put in my cons that I think they have a slew of mediocre originals, but then they have some amazing standouts. I also think though, like some of these streamers have such a grand personality, and I feel like Amazon is like the John Smith of streamers because it's just a huge conglomerate and they haven't really set themselves apart from, let's say, like Netflix when it comes to like the types of media that we can rely on and like the studio personality itself. And like they're just kind of wishy-washy in that.
I do think that like they outsource so much of their original content that's why there's such a variety of different qualities. Mm. Like it depends who's producing it and making it, because I don't think it's the same people, you know, there's different teams on a lot of it. And I feel like Netflix has more of like a chokehold on what they want to be a movie on their thing. Mm-hmm. And Amazon, I like that it's more free because you don't know necessarily what to expect from movie to movie. Whereas on Netflix, I feel like they have a very strict pattern of what they want their movies to be and how they want them to be edited. And I don't at all. Like movies on Netflix have gone down in quality so much because they wanted to fit a 90-minute cookie cutter pattern. Mm-hmm. And I hate that because I can feel it in the movie. Like I can feel it in Netflix. When you're watching a rom-com, there is no breathing time in the editing. It goes from shot to shot to shot to the line to line to line because they're like trying so hard to meet this number of minutes, the 90 minutes, so that when people click on it, they're like, oh, it's too long, because our fucking attention spans have gone to shit, even though we can watch 10 episodes of a television show back to back. I fucking hate this about society right now. Like it's so ridiculous that Netflix has taken this to heart so much that they won't allow a 2-hour movie unless Martin Scorsese is making it, and then they'll let him do 3 hours and it's the most boring shit I've ever seen in my life. I'm sorry, I'm going on a Netflix movie rant, but I'm so disappointed. Netflix can like slay a TV adaptation of anything, but when it's a book to movie adaptation, rarely does it get the time or character development that is needed for it to feel like the book, to feel like a good adaptation. The last thing I was happy with on Netflix was To All the Boys, and I know a lot of people weren't as thrilled because they had to cut some things out from the books, and if they had done like what they did for The Summer I Turned Pretty, nothing would be cut. You know, we'd get everything and it would be.
Yeah. That's why, because anyway, I think Amazon has the budget to take some risks. And that's.
I mean, Netflix could if they wanted to. They just don't have to make as many shitty things. Sometimes they just crank out shit.
True. But like Amazon has got the product side behind them. You know, like Netflix is just basically a studio and a streamer. and they also like aren't putting movies into theater, so they aren't making that revenue either. So they have to,
Well, Amazon doesn't put that many into theaters. I guess it depends on the release.
No, I'm not even talking like Amazon. I mean, fucking Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about Amazon.
Yes. But of course, they're still trying to do everything for the least amount of money.
Except get every single Taylor Swift song into the summer I turn pretty.
I will never understand how they can afford this. Mm-hmm. I think Taylor just gave them access to everything. I think Jenny was talking about this on a podcast. She wrote Taylor Swift a letter about how integral Speak Now was when she was writing The Summer I Turned Pretty.
Wow.
And then she gave her access to some of her music. And I think maybe it means all of her music. Because there's way too many Taylor Swift songs. Like, they've got to be so expensive. Mm-hmm. Can't. For even one song. Like, you look at Kitty, and the music in that is so shit. The Kitty series on... Well, okay, sometimes they have, like, a Blackpink song. But I feel like in between that, they have, like, royalty-free music. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's, like, YouTube music. Yeah. Anyway.
Netflix.
All right. But... let's wrap up Amazon here. So I feel like this has become a thing with a lot of the streamers, but it's hard to know when there's new things. Like Amazon though, especially, like, I don't think the new titles are being shown to us as much, because with this oversaturated streamer society that we're in, we have to be told what to watch. Like, there's no really deciding anymore. We go to be told, and it's the sites that are good at telling us what we want to watch that we end up sitting on the most for this content. And I think Netflix is the best at this. A lot of the time, it'll just be at the top banner for me now. They used to be shittier at it, but now, like, the new stuff is right in front of me, and I immediately, like, oh, I've been waiting to watch this, and I will click on it and stay there. Whereas on Amazon, I'm just like, whoa, so many titles, I don't know what's new. And so it's a lot of the times I go to Amazon when I need something that I know isn't on the other streamers.
The Amazon Fire TV it's great because it tells me the shows that I've watched previously. Like, it'll just pop up the shows, like, in the new seasons, like, right there. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a new season of this. I'm like, okay. So they do that for me. Yeah,
that's different on the TV. Like, when I go to Amazon, I have to go to Amazon.com, and then I have to click on Prime Video. And that is always distracting, because, like, you can get distracted by something you need on Amazon and then forget you were even there for video.
If
you're binging something... Yeah, well, but, like, the thing is, also, if you're binging something, it's just harder. Like, we're going to go to Netflix next, and Netflix is... hands down, the coziest interface, the best place to binge a show, in my opinion. And Amazon is just not ideal for that, because you'll go back to the website. It won't show you front and center what you were watching. Like, it's just, you forget that you're watching it. It's not cozy. But Netflix, ooh. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it goes at the right time to the next episode. You don't have to touch anything. Mm-hmm. And it's the best.
Yeah. It's the least buggy. It is honestly pretty much like perfection.
It is, because they've been working on it for so long, and so many of these just cropped up in the last 3 years.
Yes.
It takes time to hone that sort of ease.
My friend used to work at Netflix in the marketing department, and so I know some, like, little tricky things that they do. Obviously, they use AI to tell you what to watch next and all that stuff. But the thumbnails are
catered to you.
They are. They are the most personal streaming service. They literally will make about a galley of like 12 thumbnails, and they will test those for different types of people. So, like, you could go, like, I can go on like Alex's profile, and his thumbnail for, let's say, Bridgerton would be completely different than my thumbnail for Bridgerton. And usually my stuff is like very romantic like centered. Like if it looks like something that I probably wouldn't watch, like they're still gonna put like a thumbnail that would get me interested in it.
Yeah. Have you noticed sometimes if you haven't clicked on something, the thumbnail will change?
Yes, the thumbnail will change
to get you interested in it. Yeah.
Yes.
And it works. Like I'll notice it. I'll be like, oh, I didn't know this person was in this.
It's very interesting what they've learned to do and what like they do very differently from other streamers.
Yeah. And it's very easy to pick up exactly where you left off on anything and not forget that you were watching it on Netflix because it's right there, like right when you get on. Mm-hmm. And I hate these interfaces that don't show me right front and center where I was when I want to go back to watching. Mm-hmm. And there's no commercials on Netflix. There never has been. They might add that in, I feel like, eventually to like make more people subscribe for like a less expensive tier or something, because they're doing that on a lot of these streamers. But I think that it also is the reigning king of original content. That's fantastic. Like it started with Orange is the New Black and that one with that guy that's problematic about the government. What is that show? I can't remember what it was called. You know what I'm talking about? The one with the pedophile guy? House of Cards. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. They were both fantastic shows. They have Glow, Never Have I Ever, Stranger Things, The Crown, Umbrella Academy, Witcher, Emily in Paris, Bridgerton, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Dear White People, 13 Reasons Why, Unbelievable You, Squid Game. Like, we all know these titles. They're huge. Sex Education, Beef, like, The Queen's Gambit. So many enormous ones that that are classics now. Like, Daredevil, I don't think anyone will ever forget that series. It's like such a critically acclaimed classic. There's so many that are household names and they're given to us by Netflix originals. They can do Heartstopper. Like, they have just such quality shows, and I think that's where they really shine with these shows that you can binge, not their movies.
Yeah, I mean, at least they have given us rom-coms. I feel like Netflix and the streamers are the ones that are facilitating like the new rom-com generation. It's not the best, obviously. Like, we're not going to go back to the 90s anytime soon with theatrical releases. I mean, I think we've seen a few, like the one with Sandra Bullock, and there's like a new movie coming out with Ryan Gosling.
What one with Sandra Bullock? Are you talking about the one with Channing Tatum,
Lost City? Yeah. The Lost City, yeah. Like, at least we get new rom-coms, which makes me happy.
But everyone likes to tout Set It Up on Netflix, and I like, while that's a cute rom-com, it's not as good as the other rom-coms that we like hold up to the standards of rom-coms, I feel like. Just didn't have as hard of a punch in any direction. It was more like mellow.
They're like a little bit better than Hallmark rom-coms.
It depends. Some of them are Hallmark rom-coms and some of them are better. Like Set It Up is better than our Hallmark rom-com. Like more has been put in, more effort's been put into it.
The one with Nina Dobrev, what was that, last year, the year before, was really good. The Christmas one.
I mean, it was really good for a Christmas rom-com on Netflix. That's it. Wasn't really good. Like, it was very silly.
Yes. Netflix is very good though at marketing their shit. Like, again, their studio has a personality. Like, their socials are very fun to follow along. Like, they do their whole like Geeked Week situation stuff like twice a year to get people excited for what's to come. I think like they are the best streamer at marketing their shit, so to get people excited too. Like I love Geeked Week because I'm just like, oh my gosh, trailer after trailer after trailer, like all this new stuff.
They're really honed in on their audience. They know how to appeal to them.
What's amazing about streamers is that they are international. So before, our primetime television like did not, you know, go outside of the States. But like Netflix and Amazon, like all of that is shared with international countries, and Netflix particularly has an amazing assortment of foreign films and TV shows that everyone can enjoy as well.
Yeah, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. I feel like Netflix is so honed into their audience that they're really trying to meet their every need, but not taking many risks because of it too. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're like, we know what they like, let's just do this. And the same with, so that's like going to the detriment of like their film department. I just want their movies to like live. I feel like I enjoyed that new one that Jennifer E. Smith, Love at First Sight, but I felt like it was stifled by the rush of the edit. Like it, and I could feel it. You could feel how it's just like, go, 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 go. I'm like, let them live. Mm. It was cute, but it was compact. And when you let things breathe, they feel more real and more relatable than when you like slap them together without any breathing space. I don't know. I'm frustrated in general about like how short everything has to be right now. When it comes to like something that's not a show, everything has to be 5 seconds long. Yeah. I love Netflix and I will never, I don't think I'll ever delete it from my roster because I it's the coziest thing. Like when the show that I want to watch has come out on Netflix, I am so relieved that it's on Netflix. It's just so much easier to watch. And I love that Gilmore Girls is there. Like it has so many comfort shows. And now I've been noticing that they are pulling in bigger movie titles, which they didn't do for a while because they had so much original content. They just had their own content on there. And now they're pulling in these movies that I want to watch, like the new Spider-Man's on there, and I'm just so happy that I can Netflix it instead of having to buy it.
No Hard Feelings was on there too. I in my con, I was saying that there for a long time there wasn't enough new originals to keep me coming back, and sometimes I would scroll for like an hour, even though like they tell me what to watch. I'm just like, I don't really want to watch this. I don't really want to watch this either. But now I feel like I go on there, I'm like, oh wait, there's so much more stuff to watch now.
Yeah, I feel like there's this new wave because they had to readjust with all the new streamers and such, and you know, they dropped the password sharing, but they also have been putting more effort into like making you want to stay on the site and having more stuff you want to watch, which has been really nice to see. All right, shall we move into Peacock? What were your thoughts on Peacock? Oh, you don't have many, do you?
No, I don't know. I think I got Peacock because of Vampire Academy, and then I think we watched I can't remember if Yellowstone is on Peacock or Paramount Plus, or if it's on both. It is.
No, Yellowstone's definitely on Peacock.
I looked on Paramount Plus. It's also on Paramount Plus. I don't know if it's like a shared thing. Oh, shit. But they have like some fun, like new releases, like from the theaters, which they get pretty early, which is nice. And I think we got it for the Olympics as well. But I don't know why I still have it, because I barely go on it.
Well, this is the one that Paul is paying for me, so I don't have to like worry about wanting to cut it. But it, yeah, in terms of the interface, I feel like it's kind of like here or there. It's not the best interface, but it's not the worst. I have found that when I'm watching something, if I pause it and I come back after a while, like it doesn't run smoothly unless I refresh it. Which, you know, it's not the worst, but it's not the best. And like they have like 4 new movies usually to choose from that are like new releases. They've got a few good originals though. Like they have The Traitors, which I now love. And there's that show Girls 5 Ever that I watched a little bit of, but a lot of people love it. And then there's The Resort. We both watched that.
Yes.
But it still hasn't been renewed for a new season or canceled. So yeah, I don't know what they're doing there. I know. And they've got some of those like key comfort shows on there, like Parks and Rec and The Office.
Oh,
and
Vampire Diaries. That's what I
don't know if The Vampire Diaries is a comfort show, but it's on there. Yeah. But yeah, it's here or there. I think that would be on my chopping block to cut if I was paying for it, but I'm not. So
yeah.
All right, Max. So I fucking, just as a preamble here, I just want to say that like I've loved HBO's streaming service for years. They've had HBO Go back in like 2012, and I would be able to watch Breaking, was it Breaking Bad on there? No, because Breaking Bad wasn't on HBO. All right. I'd probably be able to watch Game of Thrones. The second it started airing on TV, and I didn't have a TV, I would be able to watch it online with HBO Go. It was so good and so nice for a college student. And then it turned into HBO.com without the Go, and then it became HBO Max.
HBO Now.
And then... HBO Now, yeah, there were so many different renditions, and they were all great, and I used them all. And now, as Max, I fucking hate it. I hate it over there. I hate the interface. It was almost like it used to be really clean and easy to look at, almost. It was like a minimalist setup for the interface, and I could find something so easily. And now, it's like someone threw up a bunch of reality shows onto the page, and I can't see anything.
Yeah, it's, I literally wrote down, when Discovery bought Warner Media, it all went downhill. It's now overrun with Discovery Plus shit that I could care the least about.
Yes. Oh my God. Like, I hate the way that Max is set up.
Well, I feel like HBO Max was for good. The film people. Like, it was for everyone who loved film, because they had, like, Warner, the everything under the umbrella of Warner Media is just so rich and has such a long history. Like, they have Turner Classic Movie, they have Studio Ghibli, like, there's a lot of films from years that people love, and like, not to mention all the new stuff they had. And then, like, during the pandemic, they would release the films that they put into the movie theaters on Max, and that was really fun. So, like, it was just so clean.
It did look clean. It looked so clean in there. It was like someone cleaned up and I could see everything. And what the actual streaming service, like, it was never, in terms of like binge watching something, was never the best. I had, when HBO Max started, it was kind of glitchy in terms of like getting to the next episode. Sometimes the thing wouldn't show up to click next episode. So you just have to like wait till it's ended if you're not going to like click out. And that was a little frustrating. But I didn't really care because I loved the interface and the content was so good. But now it's so cluttered. Like, HBO, the HBO part of HBO Max was why we were there. I don't know why you would drop the quality brand name, because when you see HBO, you know that so much care was put into making this like a film quality piece of art. And now it just says Max. I'm just so confused by it. Like, it's not hip or cool to me at all. HBO is who made House of the Dragon, Sex Lives of College Girls, Hacks, Our Flag Means Death, Star Trek, like the other two, like all these big names, What's Left of Us, Westworld, like those are all HBO. Why would you want to take HBO out of the branding? Or was HBO refusing to be next to all of their name, next to all of the stupid Discover shit?
No, I think it's just, no. They wouldn't have any control over that. No, I think it was just Discovery wanting just to morph their Discovery Plus shit into Max.
But like, why drop the HBO is what's so confusing to me.
Because they've got Discovery Plus shit on there now.
Yeah, I know. So was HBO being like, I don't want my name on that? Like, because they could be the Max was the Discovery Plus shit. Anyway, Friends is on there. So that's one of like feel right now. I feel like that's the only thing I watch on HBO Max. I never even go there anymore. I forget it exists because I'm like so turned off by the way that it looks when you go onto it. I'm just overwhelmed and irritated by the loss of all of the actual shows and so many random things from Discovery being in my face.
They do have the closest interface though to Netflix, because they do recommend movies and shows for you to watch, and they tell you like what's new or what's added. Yeah, I only really go on there to watch Game of Thrones and all the HBO shows. Like, they just dropped the second season of Gilded Age, which is one of my favorite shows. If you don't like the Buccaneers, you should watch Gilded Age, because it's the same vibes, but better.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure if HBO, like, I'll be back when White Lotus comes back and such. But right now, I'm just like, when I'm looking to find something to watch, I'm not going over there. Find it anymore.
Yeah. same. Mm-hmm. We're just rewatching Game of Thrones.
All right. So moving on to Hulu. So I just saw this news on Twitter. I'm assuming that it's accurate, but I saw a news post saying that as of March 2024, Disney and Hulu are merging into one app, which makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because Disney owns Hulu and now they're kind of redundant because Disney is putting more and more ABC stuff onto their streamer.
I'm looking it up. Disney Plus and Hulu merger.
And Hulu has felt like it's like slowly dying for the last few years in terms of like what new stuff I go to watch over there. Like I used to come for Handmaid's Tale every week, but now I'm too anxious to watch The Handmaid's Tale. And like the only original show on Hulu that I've watched in the past couple years is Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah. I watched
like
The Great.
Love Victor was canceled. Oh yeah. And The Great.
Was canceled too.
But The Great is canceled too. Yeah. They're canceling. I think The Handmaid's Tale maybe either has one more season or had the final season just recently. And I haven't watched it yet. I think the final season aired. So all of their shows are ending and they haven't put out a new thing, you know, except for Only Murders in the Building. But I could see that being on Disney Plus. Like it's very, it feels rated very PG, even though it's about murder.
Yeah. They do have like a good library of films to watch. Yeah. Oh no, I fucking hate the interface on the TV.
Oh, I like Hulu.
Oh no, no, no.
On the computer. I like it.
Oh God, no. It is the most, because I binge watched Once Upon a Time, like in September, and I was getting so annoyed because it is the most annoying. It never saves where you are. And so I would have to, like, if I pause it. No. On the TV. If I paused it and my TV went to like the screensaver mode, I would go back to it and then I would press it and restart the entire episode all again. And I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so annoyed. And so then I had to go back to the main screen outside of the TV screen and then have to wait for it to like load. And then I would press it and then it would play from where I ended. And then I got so annoyed that I switched back to Disney Plus. We're very different on these opinions. I went to Disney Plus to Disney binge Plus. Once Upon a Time because it was way better. And it remembered where I was.
Oh my God.
And you have
to computer.
Yes, I hate that you have to scroll forever to find your currently watching list. It is not at the top. It is like halfway down the interface to find what you're watching. And they've got these big long squares that are like advertising something else. And I'm like, no, I don't want to press on that.
All right. It sucks on the TV. It sounds like on the computer, it's been the same for a really long time. I go to the same spot to get to where I'm watching things, but I honestly haven't been using it very much. So maybe it's evolving to get worse because of the struggle to keep on being relevant. I don't know. But yeah, it used to be so easy. It was just like, and Hulu was like one of the first things to have multiple networks available in the same spot because back when the streamers were like on every network separate website, so you could like add the shows that you're watching and then it would tell you when those shows had new episodes right on your homepage. So I used to love Hulu, but yeah, I haven't been using it much because all the things have kind of been disappearing over there, which brings us, I guess, to Disney Plus, which I fucking hate. Disney Plus is so hard to find anything. Like, and it's so hard to search. You can't even put in the search bar. And I watch one thing every week on Disney Plus, the fucking Dancing with the Stars, and it's never on my homepage. I always have to search it. And I'm like, are you, even when I'm in the middle of an episode, I'm like, where the fuck is the one thing I watch on here? Why isn't it at the top of the page? I'm just so confused. And when there's a new episode of Dancing with the Stars airing, it doesn't even tell me. I have to search it and go there. I don't understand why they're so stupid.
I don't have that issue.
And like when you finish, when you go to watch something on the website interface, like if you click on the wrong episode, it's so hard to get back to where they have the list of episodes to find the one that you actually are supposed to be watching. You have to click like a million things. I hate it so much. I don't understand how they like... I just don't understand them. Why would it's just, and the space bar for the longest time didn't pause. So you had to like click pause.
I don't have that issue with Disney Plus. I think it is far superior to Hulu. And it's easy for me to use, but also like I'm a Disney girl. So I was so excited about Disney Plus when, they first announced it. And like, I remember there was a friend of mine who like literally took a day off of work to like watch all the new content. The thing about Disney Plus, which is annoying, is they don't have enough new content. They never have new content.
No.
They pumped us up for all this like new original content and like when they first dropped it, but then half the content didn't appeal to me, or was for kids.
Yeah.
They've shot themselves in the foot because like they have all this great IP and then they give us shows like Secret Invasion, which is absolutely terrible. It was so fun in the beginning when we had WandaVision and Loki and everyone was watching all at once and the system would get so over, you know, people wanted to watch the new episode when it dropped at midnight that it would like crash, which is annoying, but also like exciting. But now it's like they haven't taken that content and made it important for viewers to watch because they're afraid that they're not going to go watch their theatrical releases. So like we got the amazingness of WandaVision, but then her character was absolutely annihilated in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. And that just completely, I don't have trust in the shows anymore. Cause it's like, I want to enjoy this content, but I also want it to mean something and not just an extra little filler thing that I have to watch, you know, like I want it to actually work within the universe
matter in the movie world
and have like that fun, like detective type of thing where I'm trying to figure out, okay, if this happens in this show and this happens in this show, like how is this all working together?
And you want the threads to add up to be like, oh shit, this was like a reference in the show and that meant this and that's why they're doing this. And it was not like that at all.
No. None at all. I do have to say that is specific to the Marvel shows. The Star Wars shows are fucking phenomenal. A lot of them are fan service, which is, I don't mind. But like the new Ahsoka show was so good. Obviously the Mandalorian, amazing. We got Baby Yoda. There was another show, I think last year or this year, with the guy from I can't think of his name. Anyways, the Star Wars shows, I think, are on a different level. And I do love that I can go to Disney and watch all my favorite things when I want to. Like, I will go and rewatch, like, Cinderella or Little Mermaid and things like that all the time. But like I'm interested. I want to go see the Marvels because I want to see like if Ms. Marvel, like the show, does play into that, obviously, because they brought in that character. I wish we had more better content that we could trust.
Yeah, I'm very excited for the Percy Jackson show. I hate that Disney Plus is raising their prices like almost 200, like double, like
really?
The price is double what it was used to be. Yeah, that's why I had to cancel my it was like $32 a month or some shit. It was ridiculous. And unless you do their like you change, because I had the yearly plan and I was paying like $84 a year. Yeah. And it came up that when I get charged again, I'm going to be charged like $160 or something and for the year. And I was like, no, thanks. Like, I don't get anything from Disney Plus except for Dancing with the Stars, which is on Hulu the next day. So it's redundant, which is also why it makes sense that Hulu is going to merge with Disney Plus. But I don't think Disney is worth that much yearly. So I'm going to go month to month for Percy Jackson. And then I will cancel Disney Plus until I have another show that I want to watch, because I'm not using it like at all, except when there's a Disney movie out that happens to be on it. Like when Elemental came out, I was like, oh shit, I got to get my $84 of the year from watching this one movie that I now want to watch on Disney Plus. Ridiculous.
What was the last Marvel show you watched?
I tried to watch Mrs. Marvel or Miss Marvel. I got like 2 episodes in, but I just wasn't feeling it at the time. It was when I was having a hard time watching anything new because I was so anxious. There was so much other stuff that I would have rather watched. It was also like, I don't know. It was like the shows were starting to get like, there were so many Marvel shows popping up and it was hard to keep up at that time.
Well, yeah. They have now, they've also said this, but they're reworking how they do those Marvel shows because they've been kind of giving them like the movie treatment, but they should not be treated like films because usually like they never have a great payoff at the very last episode. It's always like the middle of the episode, the middle of the show, which is really good.
Yeah, it was basically after I watched the Falcon and the Captain America. Is that what it's called? It's called something. The guy with the arm. And it wasn't amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. and then I watched Loki and I was really excited until like the second half of the season got very convoluted. I didn't leave those feeling like I left WandaVision. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't as excited for the next thing that they dropped because of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, now they're bringing in Percy Jackson, so I'm going to be here.
You can sign into mine. You don't have to pay for it.
we'll see, I guess, how.
That's the one I'll trade.
Yeah, we can trade that. I can do that. Thank you. You can take my Paramount Plus.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to get rid of.
Okay. Well, so because Paramount Plus, or that's the next one on the list here. Paramount Plus, I have Paramount Plus like premium because I want to watch Survivor live. Mm-hmm. And also I get the Showtime bundle in there, which I love because when the Yellow Jackets come back, I need access to them immediately. But yeah, Paramount Plus, I only use for Survivor. I almost went down and deleted that this year, but then Survivor came back and I was like, oh, wait, no, I need to be able to watch live. So, and I like the interface on Paramount Plus. I actually think it's really, at least online, it's clear and it's not convoluted. It's like kind of reminds me of the old HBO Max. Mm-hmm. And it does do a good job of telling me like, their new movies when I go there. There's always like on the banner a new movie if they have one that I want to watch, a new good release, you know. Yeah, Survivor though, used to be able to watch it for free the second it ended. I loved about CBS.com that like midnight would strike on the East Coast and I could watch Survivor on the West Coast on CBS.com for free. It was amazing. I did it every week and now I have to pay for it and it sucks. Like all of these free things have now become a paid streamer.
Yeah. It's because everyone cut the cord and now they're like, gotta find our money some other way.
So yeah, Paramount Plus like works pretty well. It's not as glitchy as some of the others. You know what the thing about Paramount Plus though annoys me? There's one annoying thing. And I think we've talked about it before, but like when you're watching, the toggle at the bottom won't update to show you where you are in the show.
Yes. I forgot about this.
And
I forgot about it too until right now, because this was happening with Yellow Jackets. And yes! I'd be like, oh, I still have 40 minutes left. And then you would like click in and out and it would be like, you have 3 minutes left.
Well, and I also hate when like you're rewinding and it doesn't show you where in the show you are, like the little like screen, and you just have to like guesstimate.
Yeah. Like with Survivor, I don't have to do any of that because I'm watching live most of the time. So like, but when you're watching a streamed thing, it won't show you. And it's like, it's so confusing. And maybe they've debugged that since we've watched Yellow Jackets. I don't know, but that was so weird.
That's like, weird. I only had Paramount Plus for Yellow Jackets. I like went back on my Paramount Plus. I'm like, what the hell have I been watching on here? I think I watched that like Spirit Academy show for a bit.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it just it doesn't do much for me. I think we watched some of the Yellowstone series on that as well, because I think Yellowstone's on both on Peacock and Paramount Plus, because we watched the 1923
yeah,
show.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I have seen it over there too.
But yeah, there's just not enough content to keep me subscribing.
Mm-hmm. That moves us, I think, to our last one.
Yep.
Apple TV Plus. Which is the most pretentious of the fucking streamers. It thinks it's a movie theater. And yes, they are giving us high quality content, but you can only watch one episode of things at a time. It doesn't propel you to the next episode. You watch all the credits. And I mean, I like that sometimes, but when I'm trying to watch a show like consecutive episodes, I'm just like, at least give me a fucking button to press. And
yes,
also like the only way that Apple promotes its shows is on Twitter and in front of its other shows. Like you don't see trailers.
That is,
go ahead.
My biggest thing with Apple, it's like they don't market anything unless it's like, I don't even think they marketed Ted Lasso. Like it's all word of mouth. Like that's how.
No, it was word of mouth.
The only way I knew about Severance was through you. And then I think I saw like a billboard in LA because they wanted to get it nominated.
Yeah. For the Emmys.
Yeah. And I'm like sitting there, we're watching. Oh my God. Okay. That's the most annoying thing though, is because the shows are so amazing. They're so good. Even if they're
so
like,
good,
they're not, even if they're kind of okay, they're still good. So like when we had Silo premiere earlier this year, I was like, oh my God, this is so fucking amazing. It's annoying because we can't be a part of the cultural phenomenon that happens when good show shit is happening. And we can't talk about it because no one is watching it.
No one knows.
It's not like, a cultural event, and it should be.
Yes, they are so good. So some of their other originals like Dickinson, fantastic. Ted Lasso, Severance. I mean, Severance is so fucking good, and we know about it now because it was nominated for all those Emmys. I only heard about it, like I saw a tweet about it, and then I think in front of Ted Lasso maybe I saw a trailer for it, and I saw that Ben Wyatt from Parks and Rec is in it, and I was like, oh shit, like I watched that. And then I watched it, I was like, holy shit.
There was a time when Alex and I think it was when we were watching Silo, that we saw all of these science fiction type shows. They have like Foundation, Extravation, Manipulation, all these little shows that have the shun at the end of it. Okay, I don't know what they are. I do know Foundation is a show. And Alex and I were like, wait, what is this show? Jon Snow is in it. Meryl Streep's in it. Like, then we started watching it. We're just like, okay, we're just gonna watch all of these shows and they're great. Just don't understand why.
Yeah,
no one talks about them, or why they aren't using like they don't even have premieres for these shows. Like that's usually how I find it out about stuff.
The only one I've ever been to, I was invited to a thing for Dickinson before it came out, I remember, and I couldn't. It was like during when I was moving or something, so I couldn't go. But I've never seen anything for any of these shows. All I see now is on Twitter. Like that's where I saw that Shrinked. I saw one with Harrison Ford. Harrison Ford, Lake Form. All I ever see advertisement wise is on Twitter, and not a lot of people are still on Twitter. So everyone
misses it. And there aren't like billboards for Apple stuff except during Emmy season. That's when I see it. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, like they were like, for your consideration. Yeah. If you don't know, if you don't live in LA, you don't see these. But when we're like months leading up to the Emmys, every fucking billboard is for your consideration, this show for an Emmy. Mm-hmm. And because everyone out here is like in the league of people who vote for the Emmys and the Academy Awards.
Abby says, is Apple the one that had the Timmy Chalamet ad? Yes, that was the ad.
Wait, what ad?
There was a Timothy Chalamet ad where he was like watching different things. So it was just like a big expensive commercial. Is that what I've been
seeing memes about and shit?
No, Timmy was on SNL.
He was on SNL. Okay, that's what I thought it was.
Yeah.
But like I haven't looked into it. Okay.
So Apple has a ton of budget that they put towards these shows. And so they're all amazing. The thing is,
not the one apparently with Tom Holland wasn't good.
Oh yeah, that one was not great. I did watch it. But it was still like good. I still enjoyed it. It was just kind of weird. Mm-hmm. The interface, and you wrote this down. It's annoying because one, like Apple TV is also very similar to Amazon in this way, where you can buy and rent things and it'll have your library of stuff. And they have like an arcade thing on the app on your phone. They've got multiple different things. I feel like you can buy Apple products off of it. I don't know. It never holds my spot. If I pause, we have to always fast forward.
Oh my God. Apple is the absolute worst at holding your spot. You could pause and it won't play anymore. It'll glitch until you quit the app and reopen it. And even then, it won't remember. So you have to go all the way back or forward or wherever the fuck. It won't. Sometimes it doesn't even know what episode I'm on. I'm just like, I don't understand, Apple. You've been doing this now since, like, what, 2019? Fix the fucking glitches in the basic streaming of things. That is by far, I think, the most annoying thing when you're, like, trying to binge the show and you have to pause and come back. Like, that's... And you can't... A lot of times it'll play and be like... I remember wanting to murder it when Dickinson came back and I couldn't watch it because it just kept freezing. But it doesn't matter. It's like they almost don't care. When you open Apple, it almost looks like they don't have any shows. Like you have to know what you're coming for. And then that will show you other shows in front of it with like the little trailers if you don't skip them. Mm. I always have to search for the show I'm watching on Apple. There's no thing to click on.
No, like you have to scroll all the way down. They've got ads and like big rectangles like promoting shit that I don't care about. I even had to they just dropped Buccaneers and I had to go search for it. It wasn't on their main thing.
They do have a countdown and that's where I found it. But the countdown's at the bottom of the screen. It's just not organized well at all.
Yeah. It's like they
have a lot of original movies that like I never would know about.
It just feels like unless Apple, I hear about it. This is like the least on their priority list. Like they're more obviously inclined to do all their tech stuff, but then like Apple TV for some reason is still going. I don't know.
Like Coda was an Apple original movie. It was so fucking good. It won the Academy Award, but like didn't know about it until it was on the Academy Award nom list.
Yeah.
Like they did very little promotion. All right. So let's just see if you needed to cut one in the new year, what are you chopping from your list?
Paramount or Peacock.
And I am going to cut Disney. So this makes great sense. So I'll give you Paramount and I'll give you Disney. Take Paramount and Disney.
There we go.
Yeah. Woo! Saving. Oh my God. And the queen, like the top, the king, queen, prince of your streamers.
Is Netflix.
The trifecta. The holy grail. Oh, okay. Yeah. Netflix, Amazon, Paramount is probably my holy grail of streamers, which is weird to me that Paramount's on the list, but I do use it a lot.
Wow. That's weird. Mine's Netflix, Amazon, Disney+. Yeah, well, Disney+. It's weird
to me.
Yeah, it's weird to me that Disney's on yours.
Why is it weird? I'm a Disney girl.
Because they don't put out enough stuff.
Well, I could rewatch all the original stuff as much as I wanted to. All that stuff is so rewatchable.
That's like me in Survivor. All right. Merry Kiss Cliff!
All right. I picked some shows on here from some of our favorite streamers. So yeah. Who are you going to marry? Who are you going to kiss? Who are you going to cliff? Mrs. Maisel, Severance, or Bridgerton?
This is mean. Yeah. I don't know what to do with this. I mean, I've already seen all of Mrs. Maisel, so I guess like I have to cliff that one because I've already watched it.
Oh, that makes
sense. I've seen a lot of it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to watch the rest of Severance. Like, I need a season two of Severance. So I'm going to kiss that. And then Bridgerton I'm going to marry because there's more seasons to come and very rewatchable. First three or two seasons.
I feel like...
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I want to do the same thing as you, but I'm just going to mix it up just to be fun. I think I'm going to cliff Severance because I think Mrs. Maisel is very rewatchable. And
it is.
I don't want to
get
rid of it.
But you're going to cancel Severance. It's just a baby.
I know. And I'm going to marry Bridgerton because it's my favorite show. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Saw that one coming. I think this week we're going to have to cut chapter chat because there's a lot to discuss in these two chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to rush through them. So we will get back to chapters 32 and 33 next episode. But we are Christine and Natasha. Episode today, y'all. We will pick up chapter chat next week. We are on all the socials now. We have Chloe Laverson is running our socials. She's killing it over there. So make sure you're following us on @thoseforkingfangirls on Instagram, @thoseforkingfangirls on TikTok, @forkfangirlpod on Twitter if you like Twitter. And our editors are, the show is, I can't talk right now. The show is edited by Alex Polis and Jake Needham with music by Cole Jenkins and vocals by Heather Chaska. We release new episodes every single Friday. And we will see you next week. We're off to record Fangirl Tea Time. I'm Christine.
I'm Natasha.
And I'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.